This is Speaking of Events, the podcast for event industry leaders. We bring together innovators, strategic rock stars, and visionary creatives to talk all about events, industry trends, and anything in between. And speaking of events, here is your host, Carrie Garbus.
Do you know that Route 128 here in Massachusetts is known as Yankee Division Highway? I didn't. I'm not from here. I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland, and I can't think of anything more self-righteous than Massachusetts could choose to call a 57-mile state highway the Yankee Division Highway, also known as 128. I looked this up yesterday. This is how I know this critical piece of information. Yet, here we are, 128 Yankee Division Highway, and I don't have any expertise, nor do I typically care about highways. However, you're going to also learn that neither does my guest, despite what I wrongfully assumed when I first met her. So to my guest, I apologize on my behalf and on behalf of everybody else on the planet who has ever made this mistake. I apologize for assuming the name of your company meant some odd representation of the Yankee Division Highway, Route 128, but it doesn't. And so, I mean, my goal here for this podcast is to just clear the air and apologize and be seen for mistakenly knowing that. So please, audience, let me introduce you to the founder and principal at 128 Strategic Events, having nothing to do with a 57-mile state highway, righteously also known as Yankee Division Highway here in Massachusetts. It is Leora Kimmel Green. I am so excited you're here. Thank you for hanging in with me like up to this point, because it was hit or miss, you know, depending on how you took the opening story. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to chat today.
Yes, you are so welcome. Thank you. Will you please, for everybody listening, clear the air, share the background of your company's name so that no one else will feel as stupid as I did when I was like, so do you live near 128? Nope. Go.
Yeah, well, I guess it does make sense that I'm Boston-based and 128. However, my company 128 is named because my first daughter was born on January 28th, 128. And my second daughter, just by chance, is also born on the 28th. So there's a lot of 28s in our lives, which worked out when we had a second after my company was named. So there were no hurt feelings from one kid to the next. But so that is where my company name comes from, 128 Strategic Events.
Absolutely. So do you feel your company is also, do you feel it's a child a little bit?
Oh, do you ever feel that 100%. Way? I feel right, like if yeah. It wasn't a child, it would get forgotten about, right? Like there's so much going on. How do you can't forget about a child, but other things could get easily forgotten about.
Yes. Yeah. No, I totally see my company as a child. It's living, it's breathing. It's my first child after my pets, but yeah, yes. So I had pet children, company child, human child. That was enough. I'm good. And you had two, I mean, you had a company and then, well, child, company, child. Good
exactly,
for you.
Exactly. Here we are. So yeah,
here we are. We're going to actually talk about events, not highways, not children. I mean, we can, sure. Whatever. I'm open. It sounded very slurry there for a second. What is the one thing you wished more people knew about highways, events? What's the one thing you wish more people knew about events?
Oh, such a good question. Especially around nonprofit and corporate events, I wish people knew that events were part of their overall strategic marketing, communications, fundraising plans, and they weren't standalone. It's all part of how we approach our strategies for the year, and then we pull in the events to help meet those goals. So that's like my one thing, especially around nonprofit events.
So as I'm a very young nonprofit, I started a nonprofit just within the past year. So if I'm, you know, and we've thrown around a million ideas of things we should do for fundraising. And so I shouldn't just be throwing out like, oh, let's have an event. It should be, what is the plan and does an event fit in? And how do you figure that out?
Oh my goodness, such a good question. I think it's twofold. One is, do you have a community that's ready, right? And a network of donors and volunteers and supporters who are ready to join and be part of a larger event? Because the worst thing would be for a nonprofit to spend all this time and money and energy in event and have these big high hopes, but actually don't even have the database of people to pull into the event and the leaders to bring in the people, right? But I think the other part of it is, when you think about your strategy of communication and marketing over the year, having various opportunities and touch points is important for your constituents, whether that's your donors, your clients, your volunteers, however you're thinking about it. And can an event help you by bringing people in the door, having new people come into the fold of your community, fundraising, having people be part of your story? And can you create an immersive experience in your event? And the other thing I would always add is, do you actually have the internal capacity to do an event and do it well? Because events take, as you probably know, so much time, effort, blood, sweat, tears along the way. And I've seen so many times that nonprofits especially take them on and may or may not actually have the ability to execute in the way that they want, which is
so
hard.
True. What's the, if I wanted to run an event, what, and I knew it was part of it, I had my why and a bigger strategy and all those things you mentioned that I really don't have in place right now for my nonprofit, but we'll get there. We're new. What would be the ideal runway? Is there an ideal runway, meaning like 6 months, 8 months, or that's not, I'm thinking of it in the wrong way?
I don't think you're thinking about it in the wrong way. I think that you definitely want to have a date on your calendar at least a year in advance. And the way that the event world has been working in a post-COVID, or I don't like to say we're post-COVID, we're still in COVID, but in a off-ramp.
Mid-immersive COVID.
Who knows where we are, is that things are booking quickly. People want to gather. And so The biggest thing I think at this point is get your date, get your main vendors, find your venue, find your photographer. If you're a nonprofit event and you want to have a auction, who's your auctioneer? Like, find your main vendors now and get to the details, you know, 9 months, 6 months out. But if you don't get ahead of the game at this point, it's hard. It's hard.
It's so weird. Can we just take a moment and acknowledge, like, I don't know, from your space is different than the one we typically at Ovation support. So even for us, it's weird. I would assume on the nonprofit and the fundraising side, it's things are different and weird. Or is that not, are you having a different experience?
No. Everything is different and weird. And because of the pandemic, I've been doing a few social events here and there. And that's even weirder. Like, don't even go, I could go down a rabbit hole, but everything is last minute and pivoting, and how do we work with COVID and not against it or ignore it. I think it's hard. Life is hard right now, and events are part of that.
Yes, for sure.
Can I just say one other thing on that? Yeah. I just wanted to say, also, you have to be ready to pivot right now. You know, the big blasted word of 2020 through 2022,
yes,
pivot, But really you do, because you don't know what's coming down the pike. And so approaching your events at this time in this world that we're living in with flexibility is essential, I think, for success.
Right. I mean, do you have a monkeypox plan in place? Because that's like, that's the new thing as of this morning.
I hit ignore on that. I'm wondering how long I can ignore that for until that becomes part of our daily verbiage. But yes.
Right? I was like, no, there's not a thank you. No thanks, yeah. Monkeypox. Not yeah. another thing. Okay. So we will, I'm going to choose to ignore that as well. Thank okay. you for that.
I give you permission.
Yes. So if we think about pre-monkeypox, pre-COVID, back to kind of good old days and things are chugging along and crazy and everybody's working hard, but it's sort of a familiar working hard. Did you ever have an experience that, of course, you're willing to share on my favorite topic of speaker disasters? Anything?
Oh my God, please. So many, you know, I'll preempt my story with so many of my stories around speaker disasters come from generally CEOs who typically don't like to stay on script or go with a script and who go off on their own. And if any of the former CEOs who I've worked for are listening, you've done great. Don't worry. I'm not talking about you. I feel like I should give that. But I had taken a job with a nonprofit here in Boston and was hired, and they asked me to go to their big event prior to me joining. It was a few weeks prior. So I went and I was just there to help out and be, you know, see the lay of the land. And the CEO of the company got up, and it was what I would call a typical rubber chicken dinner, seated, you know, it's very like you come in, there's a cocktail, you sit down, you know, very typical. Yeah. Totally fine. The CEO gets up and he starts by saying, I will be speaking just for a few minutes here tonight. I promise this is not about me. And 45 minutes later, the CEO was still speaking. And I remember my husband was with me because they invited him because I wasn't really an employee yet. I remember looking at my husband and saying, what did I just get myself into? Like, I don't know what was talked about. I don't know why I'm here at the gala. I don't know what, I feel like the guests aren't coming out with anything. It was a story and speech that was totally irrelevant to the context of the event. And so much of what I believe in is that everything we do at events comes with intention. So I felt very strongly that I may have gotten myself into something I didn't really sign up for. However, we made progress and as the years went on, but I will say that nobody should speak in an event for longer than 5 minutes. One given person at a nonprofit event, especially when there's alcohol being served, people's
yes
is minimal. So
agreed.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. You lived through that one. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure what I don't know what I would have done in that situation. So what are some of the things, how do you like to prep speakers? What do you wish speakers did more?
So again, so much of what I think about when I approach events, including scripting, is the why. Why are people there? What are you hoping that they leave, right? If you, especially on the nonprofit side, we want them to leave telling the story of the nonprofit. Who are we? Why are we here? How are our funds utilized? What's the mission? You know, all those good things. And so if you go into your event with that mentality and you say that you have to hear or see things at least 3 times, you know, I think that with the prepping and script writing, you are coming at it from a place of what is your goal? Maybe it's based on maybe for that year, you have a strategy or a communications plan that has certain things you really want people to leave with knowing. And how do you incorporate that into the scripting of your event chairs and your CEO and tell the story differently, but with the same underlying mission or values that are shared, so that when people leave, they've heard or seen things at least three times, because people don't hear or absorb. We live in a 2-minute clip world, right? Like, we have to give it to them multiple times. So I think it's all about prepping people. And if your key people are not comfortable speaking on stage in front of hundreds or thousands of people, you have to hire someone to help them, because you get one chance at an event to tell your story from the stage, right? However it is. Mm-hmm. And you don't really want to mess it up. And you don't want to have invested all this time and money in an event and then have the key storytelling flop.
Right. So who might you hire, Leora?
I heard.
Perhaps Ovation, Ovation speaker training.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
That was a shameless plug in the middle. Never mind. Just kidding. Hire us. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I'm really enjoying about hearing from you is this passion for this holistic, overarching, intention-driven strategy approach. And you had mentioned before when we talked about using every single part of the event to execute the overall strategy. So I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of people, myself included, especially in the earlier days of my career, felt like, okay, what's the room going to look like, right? How pretty is it going to be? What's our wow factor? What flowers are we putting on the table? And as I grew within my own career, one of the things that I realized is that if we can approach every piece of the event with the idea that there's a purpose, you're going to help with this hear, see mentality of three times in everything. So your centerpieces on the table are part of your story. So maybe they're a shadow box with pictures of clients, if that's appropriate, or quotes from somebody, or if you have mission words that you're trying to ingrain in people. You know, I see your be ready here in the back. If you did an event, I would see that as the centerpiece shadow box. You know, so that is part of it. And how do you give people the immersive experience of what your clients are benefiting from your nonprofit versus just putting flowers on a table? And so that's something I think a lot about. And I think about it, not just about what's happening at the event, but what happens before an event and what happens after. So what is the email? What are the three emails that guests are getting prior to the event? How is that part of your storytelling? You know, and then how are you prepping the stage to give people an idea of what to expect at the event? And maybe it's that when you're making your video to share at the event, you're somehow pulling teasers into this pre-event email. And then what is the thank you email? You know, I would hate for a nonprofit to do all this work on an event and the next day they say, dear friends, thanks so much for coming. It was a blast. We met our fundraising goal. See you next year, right? You have to think about it, I think, as we said at the beginning, of like, how does this fit into your bigger marketing strategy?
Yeah.
And even when you go to an event, the registration table, that is your first visual at anything, a conference, a fundraiser. What is that doing for your story? Right? If you're going to spend money somewhere, that's do it there.
Yeah. You're making me think back to all the different fundraising events I've been to, and did I get all the pieces for that all the way through? What are some So what do we do instead of just saying, thanks, we met our fundraising goal? What, how do you make it, how do you send a thank you that means something other than great, thanks?
I think there's a few ways to do it. One is, depending on what type of event you've done, is it, what did a client speak at the event? You know, I think into certain sectors, if you've had a client speak at an event, can you pull from their script? Because they've been scripted, because everybody's scripted.
That's right.
Can you pull from their script, you know, your key tidbits of what was most important? So if you're working with a nonprofit who's supporting LGBTQ+ youth in the community, and you've scripted them a line that said, this nonprofit has helped me find my voice and my strength to be who I am in today's world. And that's the key message that you want to share with your donors and those who came to your event. Pull from it, pull the script and pull those key messages that we talked about throughout the event into your thank you. And of course, have pictures, visuals from the night. You know, most photographers at this point will send you the top 10 pictures from the night. You can tell them what you want back and get the right picture into that thank you email. And also write the thank you email like 2 weeks before the event. Just plop in the picture the next day, you know, if everyone's scripted, you don't have to do the work then at midnight after your event. It's all done for you.
Right. Because that's a lot of times people check out of, like, as you know, I talk to a lot of event professionals and they're like, I just love that moment. Everything's done. You can take a break, but it really isn't. There's more work to be done.
I feel strongly there's more work to be done, right? That in some ways your event is your onboarding for people because they are motivated and excited by your mission and your nonprofit. And now your job after the event is to cultivate those relationships and those meaningful connections to figure out how to keep people engaged and retain that excitement throughout the year. Because we don't have another event next week, most people.
Right.
So you have to retain that excitement and that connection from 1 year to the next for your big event. So your event in some ways is your onboarding year to year.
What are some of the biggest missteps or bad ideas that people have come to you with? Has anybody ever come to you and said, hey, you know what? I really want to do this. And then you kind of have to politely maybe redirect their focus somewhere. Anything in there?
Well, usually it's around budget. No, I'll just say, I mean, like last week I had a nonprofit call to do an event in early fall for 250 people and their budget was about $40,000. That's not, you know, that's not realistic. I think some people, mostly for nonprofits, what I see a lot of is the percentage of their fundraising to the cost of the event. You know, you want to hit certain margins to make it worthwhile, right? Because events cost money and they're good if you use them properly as marketing, communications, fundraising tools. And you don't want to raise enough money not to just cover your costs. Right? You want to think about what is the percentage to make this successful for us and for different nonprofits that might look different. But I think a lot of times nonprofits come to our company and they want a big event, but they can't actually articulate why they want the event. They just want it. And this comes back to like finding the why and everything. So why do you want the event? And if your only goal is engagement, that's a very different event than if your goal is fundraising and engagement. And I think I want to help people figure out the why, to figure out the scale and what kind of investment, both of time and financial, is needed to make a successful event.
Do I have to come to you with something more than I want to fundraise? Do I need a stronger why than that or more, or can we start there and you help me figure it out? Like, how does it work?
Yeah, I think it depends on the nonprofit. Again, if you have a bigger nonprofit where you have a communications and marketing and a fundraising team, I would say you could come to me and say, we want an event. And I would say to you, here are all the people that need to come to the table to have this conversation. Because at the end of the day, if I just had a conversation with fundraising, then I'm not aligned with what the marketing communication strategy is of the nonprofit. And so,
got it.
And vice versa. And I want to be able to like hug you all together, shake you up and spit you out into this amazing event. And so I need all the people in the room for the buy-in and for the story to come together in a holistic way that helps tell a really meaningful story that's not too fluffy, right? Like I could create fluff, we can all create fluff, but you want to be really concrete. Here are the measurements for success. Here's what's working. Here's why we need your support. And articulate it in a manner that brings people in.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Ooh, thank you for that. That's awesome. All right. So despite the fact that you currently live in Massachusetts, you did not grow up here like myself. However, unlike myself, you didn't even grow up in this country. Grew up in Ottawa, Canada, and randomly you're in Roxbury, Massachusetts. Sorry if I'm not allowed to say you're in some in undisclosed location in Massachusetts. It rhymes with Boxbury.
There you go. It's okay. Hey, so, West Roxbury.
Hey, West. Shout out to West Roxbury. So how did you get here? How does this lovely young woman from Canada end up in this crazy neck of the woods?
That's a great question. I think if I had known how permanent my decisions were at the time.
wouldn't we all?
Yeah, exactly. I when I was in high school, I went on a trip abroad, and the year after my lovely mother, who's probably listening, hey, Mom. She basically said, I don't know what you're doing this summer, but you are most certainly not sitting in my house. And a lot of my friends from that trip abroad were going to work at overnight camp in Western Massachusetts, our home away from home now. And I met my husband there. Many years ago, and the rest is history, I guess. But you know, we are, for anyone who's been in the Jewish overnight camp world, we are one of those tales that every lovely Jewish mother dreams of meeting, you know.
I'm currently dreaming of it for my own child right now, I've got to be honest.
So here we are, and that's how I ended up here. We moved to New York first. I lasted a whole 9 months there and gave a lovely ultimatum of, I love you. And we've only been married 9 months, but I can't stay in New York, and we've been in Boston since.
And it's more your speed.
Definitely more my speed. Yes. Yes.
Excellent.
Even though people don't feel people are nice here, they're certainly more, welcoming than New York.
That's interesting, because as a former New Yorker, now sort of Bostonian, I find people I actually found New Yorkers friendlier. However, upon more living here in this area, I think it's because New Yorkers maybe weren't friendlier. They just like were more talkative and would get in my face about stuff, which I don't mind. And the New Englanders, very cold and reserved and won't talk to me, but like, talk to me. I just want to talk to you about chicken at the grocery store. Why are you ignoring me? As opposed to a New Yorker will get in like a 20-minute argument with you about like breast or thigh or, you know, whatever. It's chicken.
That's true.
I'm just talking about chicken. Well, welcome. Welcome back. And so in the nonprofit world, is there a big difference, right? If we're talking, because we've got people listening who are event professionals from from all aspects, from corporate, nonprofit, profit, for-profit. What's the big, is there something that the people who do not engage in nonprofit events, is there anything they need to know? Is there anything, is there any great secret of nonprofit or something that happens in this world that that might be beneficial to their world?
What an interesting question. You know, one of the things I think that makes nonprofit events so exciting is the storytelling and the ability to share a mission. And I think what we're seeing now even more on the corporate side is who are your nonprofit partners that you can incorporate into your corporate story, right? The social responsibility side. And I think for professionals who are working to help corporations tell their social responsibility stories, looking at what nonprofits are doing and how they're doing that, they're already doing it. So you don't have to recreate the wheel, which is pretty awesome. And as more events on the corporate side do tie in the social responsibility aspect, I think there is a really nice partnership between the organizations are supporting and the corporations and how those come together. But you don't have to recreate the wheel. We're already doing it, right? A lot of nonprofits are storytelling in their events really nicely already.
Yep.
And some need help. Some need help, but that's okay. I wouldn't be employed if I did, if that were the case.
That's true, right? That's your, you're here to serve. That's it. That's it. Are you here to serve me in our lightning express round?
Of course I am.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. I'm going to put 45 seconds on the clock. There's not really a clock. And we're going to ask you, I will ask you 7 questions and we'll see how we do. Are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, excellent. Question 1, what is your favorite moment in the event process?
The initial asking of the story, the finding the why.
Ooh, yes. Who do you consider your mentor?
Oh, so many people. But my mentor, oh no, I don't know if I can answer this so quickly. I have professional mentors. So hi, Sarah Weiss, if you're listening. And Suzanne and so many of my former bosses. And I would say I have personal mentors who are some of my closest friends and confidants and who are also business owners and give me advice every day.
Love it. Love it. You know, because you're an expert on highways, what's the worst traffic you've experienced here in the US?
Oh, God. Well, I'm traveling this Memorial Day weekend. I'm already anxious about it. And my husband jokes, I always talk about Cape traffic, no matter which way I'm going. So Cape traffic every way, no matter where you're leaving Boston from.
Okay. Where are you going on vacation? This is not in the 7 seconds.
Western
questions,
Mass.
No, I'm just curious.
I'm going to camp.
Oh, you are? You're going to camp. Oh yes. My gosh. Okay. Amazing. Yes. All right. What do you do every day to stay healthy and sane?
Oh, great one. I exercise every day. I do something every day. And I love to watch art TikTok with my 6-year-old.
Oh, I love that. Okay. If you weren't talking to me right now, what would you be doing?
Laundry.
Oh, that's very glamorous. What? I have not asked this one to anybody else and I'm super excited to ask you.
Okay,
anybody?
I can't
wait. What's your favorite Jewish holiday?
Oh, good one. My favorite Jewish holiday is probably Rosh Hashanah, like the new year. I feel like it aligns with the start of the school year for my kids. It aligns with like coming out of the summer. There's always good food. I love going to our temple. So that's my favorite.
Okay. Yay. Some apples and honey for everyone.
Yes.
Final question. What is the best way to care for an event professional?
Oh, bring them a coffee on events day. I feel as though just bring them a coffee on events day. And also, I love when people I work with will say, if they want to talk on this site at an event, let's sit and talk because we're on our feet all day long. So just like, if we need to chat for a minute, let's sit and do that.
That is amazing advice. Thank you. Coffee and sitting. Yes. I think that's, those are doable, actionable things.
Those are important ones.
Much. Well, Leora, you have lived through the Lightning Express round. Thank you very much. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Amazing. If people want to find you, and I hope that they do, you are a vault of amazing knowledge and inspiration. Where can people find you? Because it's not on 128. So where can people find you if they want to?
Well, my website is 128strategicevents.com and Instagram 128, 1-O-N-E, and then the number 28 events for both my website and Instagram.
Yep, we'll put it in the notes. We will put it in the notes so they can find you for sure.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. This was a different kind of conversation, and I really enjoyed it and learned a ton. So thank you for your time and your passion and your appreciation for all things events and fundraising and all the great things you brought to the table. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, and I hope we can talk again soon.
Oh, yes. Well, yes, I do. And I want to hear about more about camp. And for our audience, thank you for listening. Give us some love, because if you like events, if you love events, even if you loathe events, tell someone about this podcast. And also rate us. Give us some stars. We're awesome. I deserve a couple stars. Come on. And send out some appreciation to Leora Kimmel Green of 128 Events. 128 Strategic Events. Don't forget the strategic, Carrie. That's just lame. And remember that whatever you speak about, remember to be speaking of events.
Speaking of Events is sponsored by Ovation, the gold standard for professional presence and speaker development training, helping everyone get prepared, get confident, and get ovationed.